Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello, sporting friends, and welcome, if you will, to the Indie Football Podcast. Talking about a Super Sunday that lived up to its superlative name, superlative billing, and to guide you through this weekend's action, and of course the Champions League draw, which has just this hour concluded. I'm joined by a man who will provide analysis that is snappier than Jurgen Klopp in a post-match interview. It's Miguel Delaney, everybody.
Yep, thanks.
No problem. How are you doing today?
Okay, a little bit tired.
Yeah, always away on a Monday morning. The other half of this footballing...
Well, I got home late last night.
All right, no one cares. And the other half of this footballing odd couple, with jokes as saucy as Jose Mourinho's coat after yet another fight in the tunnel, it's Jack Pitbrook.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, mate. I know strictly no sauce thrown in this instance. It was more dairy. How are we feeling on the minor details of...
I thought that was a reference to Man's Not Hot.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
What?
Is this some sort of cultural reference?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Actually, the one thing about Mourinho, probably he thought City were milking it.
Yes, he did think City were milking it. Huh? Well identified. I'm just going to skim that joke out of the way.
Don't edit that out.
Possibly edit that out. An incredible afternoon of football on Sunday, of which obviously we're going to start at the very beginning, mainly because we've got Jack here and Jack was there. At St Mary's for Southampton versus Arsenal. Chilly, was it?
Yeah, it was freezing.
A bracing wind coming off the coast?
Yeah, it was really cold.
And the game itself, just give us clip notes.
Saints were really, really good.
How are we feeling about Pellegrino now?
Yeah, I kind of feel like he might have cracked it. So, obviously they were unlucky to lose at City the other week. In this game... they scored after 2 minutes. They were all over Arsenal for the first 10 minutes. Arsenal started a bit like they started the Man United game, as in disastrously badly at the back. Charlie Austin could have scored about 4 goals in the opening few minutes of the game. They went 1-0 up, but then they defended really, really well. Like, they were happy to sit deep, defend in a kind of 5-4-1 that turned into a sort of 4-3-3 when they had the ball. But they were really, really, they were really impressive. And
how were they creating, by the way? Because Pellegrino's a good defensive coach, I mean, as you might expect from a centre-back, I guess. His Alaves team were solid, but their problem came against the kind of... I guess, basically, the margins will always be fine with a defensive team, because if you don't beat the smaller teams, then you're suddenly in trouble. Mm. And I kind of fancy them to play tight against teams like Arsenal. But how were they creating chances?
Basically, almost all on the break. Like, they didn't really... They hardly ever would dominate possession and then try and take things from there. Tadic was really good. Austin, runs in behind a lot. He's busy. He gets caught offside a few times. But I thought their creative play was okay. And to be honest, the more Arsenal threw at it in the second half, the more dangerous Saints were. They had some... Nathan Redmond had a really good chance to go to make it 2-0. If he took in that, it would have been game over. Arsenal, kind of worryingly, couldn't create anything despite dominating possession for basically the whole game. In terms of actual chances... Fraser Forster had to make one save from Ramsey in the first half, had to make a save from an Alexis Sanchez free kick in the second half. And then in the 89th minute, Sanchez hits a crossover from the left and Giroud nods it in for a goal completely out of nowhere.
It's a bit weird, Arsenal. I mean, they go through so many of these kind of like odds, but like leading up to the Spurs game, and with that result, it kind of looked, when it was one of their kind of periodic, we are good now. And now it's back to kind of like...
Yeah, just when you think that...
Since they posted that gif of the tea.
They pull you back out.
they're just a patchy team. They're just a patchy team who are flawed. Yeah. They're not.
Did the impression?
Just when you thought they were in, they pull you back out. Yeah. And
that came with added arm motions. On an audio medium, not necessarily the best. But
not quite Silvio Dante.
Not yet. They'd won 5 in 6 before the Man United game, and the only one of those which they'd lost was Man City away, which is obviously the hardest game of the season. They'd had 3 clean sheets in a row. Then they go into the United game. They completely screw up the first 10 minutes, gift away 2 goals, lose the game. This game, terrible first minutes, gift away a goal, draw this one just about, luckily. Like, they're already... I think basically the problems are more or less the same problems they've always had. The defence isn't great. Like, they had solidity for a while, but it was solidity with these kind of old, slow players. And with Skodran Mustafi out for this game, they had Per Mertesacker, who looked nowhere near ready, basically, to be playing the Premier League. I don't really think they're not... They can be really good at creating chances when they're on top, but they're not that good at picking through a mass defence. Like, there were so many times in this game where Xhaka and Ramsey would have the ball and Saints would retreat and it was on them to do something good with it. And Xhaka didn't have the quality to do anything good with it. And Ramsey's always looking to kind of run off the ball, basically, rather than do anything in possession. And then you've got the bigger issue, which is Ozil and Sanchez. Like, Ozil has been playing brilliantly recently, but wasn't... He had a few nice moments, but wasn't great. And then Sanchez was terrible. Like, Sanchez, to me, looks like he's been playing within himself for a while. I think he's not really... I don't think he's got over the twin blows of not getting a move to Manchester City and Chile not going to the World Cup.
Yeah.
It looks like he's just kind of playing out time at Arsenal, hoping that he'll get a move in January.
So, I think we've pretty much covered off Arsenal-Southampton, which was... the third biggest game of the day, let's be honest. Nonetheless, thank you for making the trip down there. Liverpool-Everton, obviously neither of you were at.
I was on a train for the all of it.
We had MJ Critch. No, he was with you in Manchester, wasn't he? So Simon Hughes was there for us. Liverpool, basically the biggest story to come out of this game, Liverpool rested Philip Coutinho and Roberto Firmino. They dominated the game, should have won by several. Sadio Mane, in particular, wasted a great chance. They did score a wonderful goal through Mo Salah, but then Everton get a controversial penalty late on. It's converted by Wayne Rooney, and it's a draw in the end. So, where do you stand on the argument that Klopp should have played a stronger team? Because they were still the better side. So, there's two kind of sides to this. I've seen people say, well, he played a team that dominated the game and should have won if they'd taken their chances. So there's nothing wrong with the team selection he did. And, you know, and at the end of the day, he needs to keep rotating his squad. Or are you more on the other side where it's, well, you play your strongest team in a huge derby game that your fans really care about. You get the result secure and then you can start rotating.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably go with the latter only because of the fixture that surrounded it. I mean, they won 7-0 in midweek and a stroll, and that was, I think, was that the Tuesday game?
I can't remember.
Either way, it's still, even so, it's Wednesday, it's Sunday, that's a lot of time. Then the midweek game coming is West Brom at home. So I think it's surprising that he chose the derby in the middle to rest two players, unless he spotted something tactical, but I can't really see that given these, you know, Coutinho is arguably their best player.
And Jack, presumably you've seen his post-match interview, Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, Klopp's got this habit of real kind of chippiness when things go against him, which
he's a bad
is
loser.
Kind of, yeah, he's clearly a really bad loser, which is at odds with his like really performative "I'm a great bloke" thing, which I think, you know,
the Germany in Holloway, as someone I know calls him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like Klopp. I think he's obviously a smart, funny, interesting guy, but equally he's not. There is this kind of prickly side to him, and I don't think he comes across in a very good light.
If you're a guy who is going to get that angry, as angry as he did about conceding an equaliser in a big derby game like that, then play your strongest team in the derby game if you care so much about it. And I've had loads of people today telling me that it doesn't matter because they dominated the game. Well, no, if you play your absolute strongest team, you win that game. You put it beyond that. Everton were dreadful. Everton, like, it was a pitiful performance, really, in terms of, like, you talk about Mourinho not wanting to play the game. Allardyce put them out to defend. And the first half particularly, they would just die. They had like one shot on target. And that should be a game that this Liverpool team wins easily. And with a weakened side, they didn't. That's where I come down on it. It's, you've dropped a point because against an Allardyce team... Like,
you've unnecessarily put it at risk. And that's what happened. I mean, if Coutinho's there, they probably take more of those chances.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I appreciate Liverpool will be a stronger team next season with Naby Keita in there and whoever. But this was just... This was a result that, you know, the instance I talked about earlier with Sadio Mane, I don't know if you saw it, you were on the train, but he's through on goal and there are two or three guys queuing up. He's basically one-on-one with the keeper. There's two or three guys queuing up alongside him. He just needs to pass it and he shoots instead. It misses. like smiles about it, but then so many of these great chances that they miss then comes back to bite them.
Yeah.
Whether or not you think it was a penalty, have you seen the penalty incident, Jack?
Yeah, it was definitely a penalty.
No, I thought it was a penalty as well. So you can't really cling to that. And that's my main takeaway from the Merseyside derby. Anything else that strikes you guys from that?
Well, it's funny. We're now in this I'm sure we'll come onto this when we do the Champions League draw, but we're now in this position where City look like they're going to get 100 points or near enough in the Premier League. But Chelsea, Manchester United, Liverpool and Tottenham, who all got no chance in the Prem, are going to be focusing fully on the Champions League. And could all, like, are all really dangerous teams who could definitely beat anyone, including City, over two legs.
On their day, when they play their best, could Liverpool beat anyone in Europe?
Definitely.
Because they kind of build up to this kind of hurricane barometer.
They could stick three or four past any team, right?
Yeah, the issue with this Liverpool isn't the top level they can reach, it's the more sustainable level.
Yeah. They haven't really got that consistency. Like Arsenal, they haven't got the consistency that goes with being a top team.
Mm. Although you wouldn't have
but
Arsenal.
Their top level is much higher than Arsenal's.
Yeah, no, I think their ceiling is beyond what Arsenal can achieve. Everton, just a word on them, starting to turn it around slightly under Sam, as you'd expect.
Wayne Rooney has now got as many goals as Romelu Lukaku this season in the league.
Yes, because he's as good a striker.
Better. Was better.
And Romelu Lukaku plays for Manchester United, who played a derby game this weekend against Manchester City at Old Trafford. Miguel, you were there.
Yep.
Jack, you were certainly watching. So give me your biggest takeaway from that, Migs.
Title's over, I suppose, is the biggest.
No, come on. Yeah. We've been saying that for weeks. Yeah. Get a better one from that.
I think this really made crystal. I think this was a huge game for Mourinho because this was both a glimpse of the future and justified so many recent concerns. I mean, if he's not even allowing for the loss of Pogba, if you're not going to do a bit more in this game, then what's the overall plan here with United against the kind of this, especially against a superpower like City? And I thought it was one of the things actually I've been thinking about it more and more since the game is finished. I sensed a lot of irritation in Old Trafford about the City. I think this was a really good supporter chant because of how much it got under their skin. The park the bus, Man United chant.
Yeah. And they were getting clearly provoked by it because you did hear the attack chants coming from Old Trafford, which we've heard before. But in a game like this, Jack, we were saying earlier on that one of the, probably Mourinho's biggest achievements since he took over at Man United isn't signing Pogba, it isn't getting that defence to work. It's probably convincing the fans that they're somehow underdogs.
Yeah, he's completely gaslighted them. Yeah. It's been amazing. Like I know Pogba was injured, but they have hundreds of millions of pounds worth of footballers.
If Pogba played, would they have been any different?
Yeah, hypothetically you took all the attacking players that play for Manchester City out of that team and replaced them with the attacking players that play for Manchester United, I think particularly Martial, Rashford,
Mkhitaryan,
Pogba if he was fit, Mata. Like, City would be amazing.
In fact, in terms of the profile of the players, I know maybe United don't have a De Bruyne, but then a Pogba could be a De Bruyne. Maybe we're drawn. Like, he's got the ability to.
Imagine what Pogba would be like under Guardiola.
This is a dodgy question for United in that sense as well, or for United fans.
We should do a piece on this. Yeah. So if you're listening, don't write this piece before we publish it. You could have Herrera as a Fernandinho, Pogba as De Bruyne, Mata as David Silva. You'd probably drop Lukaku.
And in fact, that's just
you'd have Martial as a centre footballer, as a sort of Gabriel Jesus, Rashford as a sort of Sané, and then Mkhitaryan as the Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
It's a really good team.
It's true.
Give them 6 months to a year of coaching under Pep.
Are you going
to
do that piece today?
And that team would win the league.
Yeah. You should do that piece today.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Hopefully before anyone listens. Yeah. Head to independent.co.uk/football right now to read Jack's brilliant piece.
To cut across, but even like before Mourinho got his hands on him, really, Mata, there was all this debate over who was the best Spanish little playmaker in England. Was it Mata, was it Silva, or was it Cazorla? Like, that was actually the discussion at the time. Now, obviously, Silva's kind of proven himself to be at level of both of them.
And Cazorla died a couple of years ago, didn't he?
Poor old Santi.
Poor old Santi. Yeah. That picture of his ankle is just dreadful, isn't it?
A lovely man.
But he's evolved into a different player as well. Like, he's kind of that deep guy now.
But
Mata and Silva obviously playing different roles, but Mata is that proverbial bird in the cage, isn't he?
The other side of actually I think Barney Rene tweeted this because we'd actually been discussing it on the train up. But he said, the train back. If you look at that City team, like as well as good as much as Pep has them purring, and as much as Mourinho would probably kind of try this whole argument. Oh, how could I possibly produce a tactical miracle against a team this big and have to do what I can do? This it's not Pep's Barca in the sense that Fernandinho isn't Busquets. You know, Kyle Walker is probably the defender closest to his prime in that back four, but he's not Dani Alves. Nicolas Otamendi has come on a lot, but is still a bit suspect in possession. Vincent Kompany isn't what he was. Fabian Delph is a compromise. They could be got at. Mm-hmm. You know, just couldn't get at them.
Yeah, they had Mangala on in the second half.
Yeah.
You wonder, in the Champions League, if City do draw a team that will take it to them. Like, City-Real Madrid at some point would be a great tie, I think, just because, you know, Real Madrid won't sit back.
Yeah,
and they will probably try, and especially if you've got Otamendi and Mangala playing, because Kompany's done his calf again. Mm. And you have
when's John Stones due to come back? It's next few weeks.
Yeah,
you hope so.
Christmas, New Year.
Because I mean, the fact that they're doing this without Stones as well, you know, he's kind of a key cog in terms of playing out.
I remember
from the
doing
back.
A podcast at the about 2 or 3 weeks into the season where I said something stupid like, "I wonder whether City can win the league with Otamendi." Whereas since then, he must have listened to the podcast and
pinned it to his wall.
Yeah. Because since then, he's been brilliant. Like, he's scored, I mean...
It's gone from 2.97 to 5.15.
Yeah, and his defending's been... I mean, I know he was kind of... He got underneath the ball for Rashford's goal, but his defending's been immaculate for the most part.
I think,
and he's done it without Stones.
I was talking to some of the Argentinian guys that know him yesterday, and he said Pep has worked on him with two things in particular. First of all... an aggression at second balls in both boxes.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I suppose the more basic thing is that he just understands the system, but if they've all, it's brought what they all feel is a bigger composure to his game.
Yeah, I remember listening to Marty Perenau, who obviously knows Pep quite well and people around Pep, speaking on a podcast, on a different podcast last week, which is really good. And he said that the change in Otamendi has been crazy. Obviously, lots of players have improved under Pep, but Otamendi is probably the one who's improved the most and the most surprisingly because he's older, because people who saw him play for Valencia thought he was okay but nothing special, and because he was pretty ropey in his first year at City.
He feels like the most anti-Pep player possible in that he's not just like he's a defender. A defender was never really known for his kind of, you know, possession or anything like that. He's kind of just he's a battle-ready defender.
And Mourinho kicking off post-match, I think we just need to address it because it's always the thing with him, you know, people talk about, it sometimes is a bit like, no, I think Mourinho is more intelligent than Donald Trump, which is probably a worrying precursor to what I'm about to say. What we get whenever Mourinho does something is this assumption there's some sort of wild mind game. So he goes into the Man City change room after the game and says, and is having a go at them for celebrating too loud.
Going by the reported details of this story, it feels a little bit like when he went up to Conte after the 4-0 defeat to Chelsea, in that he's trying to create some sort of moral fuss to both deflect and take away from the extent of his side's beating.
Yeah, because, you know, the diversion thing. Mm. So people always say, oh, you know, Mourinho wants us to be talking about that instead of talking about the game where they got battered. Well, you know, we happily talk about both. We have extensively talked about both.
Yeah.
They were battered, and after the game, he tried to create a diversion, which is like what we're addressing now.
But it doesn't deflect from the fact that they were talking. It comes back to two opposing philosophies of football. For all we're discussing Mourinho's post-game stuff, I thought Guardiola's post-game press conference was very interesting, because I think he was using this victory to settle a few scores. And there was one very interesting point I thought, where he was talking about, first of all, when Mourinho's accusation that the whole game came down to this Herrera dive, and it was a dive, it wasn't a penalty, I didn't think it was a penalty. And then about City diving themselves. So Pep finally addressed that. And he started to go on a team that has 60, 65%, 70% of the ball in every game, that is honesty, that's courage, or something along those lines. I think that says more than he's actually saying, because I think it touches on this whole idea that, well, first of all, it's difficult not to think he was referencing this reported belief that Mourinho has, that his whole football idea is based on if you have the ball, you're more likely to make a mistake. So it's obviously the courage to not make a mistake, which is what Guardiola's football is all about. And it does touch on, I remember seeing a clip of Bill Shankly talking about exactly this when he talks about courage in football. It's not being willing to be physical, it's not getting into a tackle, it's actually being willing to express yourself and get on the ball. And Guardiola's entire coaching philosophy is built around that. And I think we saw the very two disparate effects yesterday, particularly in the first 30 minutes, when suddenly City were just kind of weaving their way through the United. In fact, and the only reason that game wasn't worse, and there's been a lot of talk about, oh, De Gea didn't have that many saves, City actually just slightly over-elaborated. There was so many times...
City were quite imprecise in the final third, weren't they? There were lots of times, either where they couldn't get a shot away or the final pass went wrong, or... I mean, I don't think I thought Gabriel Jesus played well in general, but he was a bit sloppy in the box.
Well, there was two more... I think there was three moves in total that either ended with one of the two, Sterling and Jesus, they worked their way in. And it sort of took like two or three touches too many and then finished with these kind of like low, weird shots.
Yeah, there were quite a few scuff finishes. I was wondering whether it was because with Sané on the right, Sterling through the middle and Jesus kind of cutting in from the left, they're all like slightly unfamiliar roles and it looked like they weren't fully prepared for kind of what run to make, what pass to make in the final third because of that unfamiliarity.
Yeah. It was a theme that came from both of these derbies though, wasn't it? That, you know, Liverpool accused Everton of basically not having tried to play. And then what happened with Manchester United where they just didn't try to play. I think everyone has said now that Man City are going to win the title. There's no one sees any way that they can get caught.
It's a record lead for the stage of the season, isn't it?
Do you think they're going to get the record points haul?
The only thing that could hold that back, I think, is the fact if they go far in Europe and then suddenly they're going to compromise, which is fair enough, because the Champions League means a lot more than a record point haul.
They could drop 16 points in the last 22 games and still get 96 points. So they can drop 12 points. I think 12 points sounds like a reasonable number of points for them to drop over 22 games. Mm-hmm. Drop 12 points, they get 100. Mm. I think we're on course for 100 points.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You've got to assume now that Guardiola will turn his attentions, like us in this podcast, to the Champions League and the Champions League draw. Manchester City got the easiest draw of the lot. Jack, I'm sure he won't mind me revealing, referred to it as a bye to the quarterfinals. FC Basel, what do we think about that?
Yeah, I mean, the only issue with that is that you wonder whether, you know, it will kind of detract from motivation and if City, particularly if City are focusing on the Prem or whatever, and if they take their eye off the ball, then maybe they could lose.
When is Mendy back?
Pep said hopefully for the semi-finals.
Okay, so that's still a way off. Yeah.
The shark.
But, you know, it's a boost if they do get him back because Delph does look a little bit suspect.
I thought yesterday was Delph's worst game.
Definitely
as left
his
back.
Worst game as left back.
He made a few mistakes.
They targeted him, I think, actually, you know, in their few attacks that they obviously went for Delph every single time.
Yeah. So somewhere vaguely in the region between Lukaku's touch and and Delph's.
Lukaku's touch or a clearance to Rosette.
Lukaku
whatever.
Got two assists.
Okay, yeah.
I mean,
I have to say, when Edison saved that woman with his face, I wasn't going to... Oh, I was beginning to feel sorry for the Lukaku.
Manchester United also got I think we can call it a friendly draw. Sevilla are a good side and have had success in European competitions. But they are not, you know, we saw them against Liverpool and they were fine. Mm. Yeah, they came back from 2-0 down, wasn't it, in that game?
Yeah. 3-0 down.
3-0 down, yes.
Pichuan Ball.
They're a good side, but they are one of three La Liga teams to have got a tough draw. Sevilla and Man United
But much as we're criticising Mourinho, I think they'd be very dangerous in the Champions League.
Of course. Mm. So if they knock out Sevilla and get to the Champions League quarterfinals, in many ways it's already a good season.
Yeah.
It's one of Man United's best seasons in. Where did Moyes get?
Quarterfinals.
He got quarterfinals.
I remember those briefly. They're going to be in the semis and ever scored that goal in Bayern, and then they conceded 2 minutes later.
Yeah, that was. God, that was crazy, that Moyes season. So Real Madrid, the other La Liga team who are struggling a little after drawing PSG, we'll talk about that one in a bit. Chelsea have got Barcelona, which we think, you know, is another great draw. Mm. So La Liga the Spanish teams have dominated this competition for the last few years, but the only three teams I've got left, remember Atletico got bombed out of a group they should have won. And now three La Liga teams feasibly could be out before the quarterfinals. Well, how do you see Chelsea-Barcelona going?
I think that's very, very 50-50.
It's even, isn't it?
Yeah.
Valverde's Barcelona are not the Barcelona people have... I guess with a lot of English teams in the Champions League, people might not have seen that much Barca this season, but this is not vintage Barca by any stretch. However, and they're probably harder to beat.
Yeah, well, the dependency on Messi is greater than ever.
Yes, massively. Mm. If Messi is out for this game, then
actually Kante on Messi is going to be very interesting.
Do you think that's what they'll do?
You have to think so, especially given how much Messi drops now. Like, that could be fascinating. The kind of the best attacking player against the best.
Barca will buy in January.
That's true.
Thing you can guarantee. They're going to buy in January. And they're going to buy in the summer. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. It wouldn't be the first team to buy kind of with one of those Champions League ties in mind. We've talked.
Love Dembele back as well.
Juve Spurs, Jack. I haven't mentioned yet. That's a belter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good.
Poch wanted a big team.
Yeah, Pochettino said that he'd wanted to face top opposition. I think they've got no reason to be worried, given how well they did against Real Madrid and Borussia Dortmund in the group stage. Of course, Spurs also beat Juventus in a pre-season friendly back in August,
which is huge.
Yeah, so I
think Sissoko the star there, so we can assume that's going to happen again.
Yeah, definitely. I'd be quite optimistic from a Spurs perspective about these ties, not just from a kind of what a great spectacle it's going to be perspective, but also because I think they can probably get through. I mean, I don't think Juventus are unbeatable, even though they, and also I think they're kind of coming down from the realization they're probably not going to win, this group of players are probably not going to win the Champions League.
Would you prefer on Wednesday, 7th of March, would you prefer to go to Spurs Juve or Man City Basel?
Well, Spurs Juve will be a much better game.
So we could probably put you down for that. I think it'll be one of those games where, like, when it's at Wembley as well, it feels fitting. Mm. You know,
completely,
there's a lot of these games
yeah.
where it's like...
If it's Stoke at home, it does feel like you think, why exactly are we playing this game at Wembley? Whereas for you, like...
Spurs Real Madrid, an occasion.
Yeah.
Spurs
Juve, that was a great occasion.
And it seems to get Spurs going for Wembley as well. I mean, I think one of the problems they've had, and Gary Megson was big in this after the West Brom game, you know, look, you know, we're finally getting to play at Wembley. We're up for it then.
Gary Megson getting a mention on the Indie Football Podcast, weirdly.
I like him.
After years in the abyss. Mm. He hasn't stayed on with Pards, I don't think.
I don't
be very
think
surprised.
So.
I have to check that one out.
Porto v Liverpool, we haven't mentioned.
Porto's a great city.
Nice city. Sergio Conceição, talented young manager, did well at Nantes.
Got a hat-trick against... In the Euro 2000s. Anyone know that one?
Euro 2000?
Yeah, hat-trick against Germany. A flattened Germany team.
Well, he's done all right at Porto. He did a great job at Nantes. He's been replaced by Claudio Ranieri. He took the job at Porto, which was like his dream job. Very talented young coach. I was talking to someone who knows him very well recently, and I said, you know, this is his dream job. Then he wants to kind of do everything with Porto. And they said, no, he wants to go to the top. Like, so he's going to see this as an opportunity to get really noticed on the European scale. And Porto aren't a bad team. They've got good players, Yassin Brahimi, and players like that are going to cause problems. So it'll be interesting to see that against Liverpool, though they did have an easy group, so it's hard to gauge just how good they are. But that group of, what was it, Porto?
Yeah, well, it was a group that looked a lot more even than it ended up.
Leipzig, Monaco?
Monaco, yeah.
Yeah, so
true, Matt, yeah.
It was four 7 out of 10 teams. So Porto got Liverpool. So the draw in full for you. Juventus against Tottenham, pick a team.
Tottenham.
Much confidence. Basel versus Manchester City.
City.
Porto, Liverpool.
Liverpool.
God, Anglophiles in the room. Sevilla versus Manchester United.
United.
Real Madrid versus Paris Saint-Germain.
Ooh. I'd love to say Madrid, but think Paris probably get through. I mean, so much can change.
First leg is at the Bernabeu, so the old remontada is probably off. They love a second leg at home.
They do, yeah.
Huge part of the folklore. Interesting clash between kind of European Cup past and possibly Champions League future.
The establishment against the nouveau riche.
Yes. I mean, it would mean a lot to Nasser El Khelaifi and chums if they knocked off Real Madrid. But you fancy PSG, you fancy
Real Madrid.
Real Madrid for that. Shakhtar against Roma, we haven't mentioned because it's dull. Anyone?
Could be a good game. Two good teams this season.
Actually, really to be fair to Shakhtar, I was quite impressed by their game against City. But
Roma.
You think Shakhtar or Roma? Excellent. Really? Chelsea-Barca. No, I fancy this one.
Ooh.
I think that's basically, like Miguel was saying, I think that's basically a coin flip.
Mm.
I
actually don't think this is as good a tie as Miguel thinks it is. But
no.
I'm going to say Chelsea because I love the English teams.
Chelsea
on their day could probably beat anyone, I think. I mean, obviously, that's also true of Barcelona. I don't know. I just think that.
Just the messy
I think factor. Chelsea are strong. They're solid. They're better organised.
There's nothing better than just getting to see Messi on English soil, is it? I mean, he's just.
Never scored against Chelsea.
And the final one is Bayern Munich against Besiktas.
Bayern Munich could end up surprising a few people. Well, not surprising, maybe that's the wrong word given their pedigree. They were almost kind of, to an extent, written off with Sack Ancelotti, bringing back Hinks. And yet now they could. And I think there won't be that much attention on them because it's quite it's a low profile draw.
It is.
Or a low wattage draw compared to the others. So I think they could suddenly be in the quarters, the semis, and then. Oh no, Bayern are looking good again.
You're wrong. The answer is actually Besiktas.
I thought you might lean that way.
Why is that, Jack?
Because they do hilarious videos on social media for signings.
Yeah.
They've got a fantastic new stadium in the middle of Istanbul. They've got Pepe. They've got Gary Medel. They've got Alvaro Negredo. Jermaine Lenz.
That is Ogazan, the ultimate shithouse team, isn't it? Gary Medel and Pepe.
Ricardo Quaresma. Ogazan Özyekup. Cenk Tosun.
Basically, that's your Turkish team.
Cenk Tosun could be gone by then. Well, he could be planning his trade in South London.
What? So you're a Black Eagle, is it?
All the way.
I thought they were the... Who's the Crocodiles? Alberta Spor, the one to the Crocodile Stadium. Slightly rambling at the end there, but the key thing is all five teams from England will be going through in the Champions League as decided by Jack and Miguel.
That's
never happened before.
It's what Brexit England deserves.
What do they do? We just basically appointed loads of foreign experts. Pochettino, Conte, Guardiola, Mourinho, Klopp.
Do you want to discuss the bottom half of the Premier League, which is 10 teams separated by 7 points?
Do you want to rant about Palace for a bit?
No, I've got no desire to talk about that football club. it's interesting looking at it.
We should probably give Moyes a bit of credit.
Yeah, go on. Well, yeah. I actually didn't see West Ham Chelsea, so please do.
They were very, 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 very well organised.
They kind of carried on from where they did against City, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, also, it was an organisation that was completely missing from Moyes at Manchester United and Sunderland. Now, I suppose with Manchester United, the issue, they didn't quite require organisation. They required something more that looked a level beyond Moyes. And then it looked like he was kind of a busted flush at Sunderland. He just couldn't get that anymore. And this was a classically Moyes performance. And I mean that in the most positive way.
Yeah, completely. You know, organised, hardworking, like capable of making the most of not much possession. Really impressive, so much so that you now think, well, they probably will actually stay up.
West Ham winning 1-0 against Chelsea, Marko Arnautovic with the only goal. Miguel, I remember, tipped him for signing of the season. I think that's
Could he?
Was that second goal of the season?
Just needed the right manager.
Burnley beat Watford. Burnley are seventh on 28 points, level with Tottenham, just 1 point behind Arsenal. Something I never thought I'd be saying. Palace drew 2-2 with Bournemouth.
You might have said it in 1960.
But I wasn't alive in 1960. Christian Benteke having a last-minute penalty saved. Huddersfield 2, Brighton 0, which clouds the picture again as it drags Brighton really into the relegation mix. That bottom 11 team is just a mess of middling, mediocre sides who can beat each other any week.
It's a lottery, mate. Yeah.
Swansea beat West Brom. Tottenham smashed Stoke. And then Leicester got a late own goal to win against Newcastle, which is apparently got them going wild in the northeast, according to our North-Eastern correspondent Martin Hardy today. So that's the Premier League, that's the Champions League. Oh, the Europa League, Arsenal drew Ostersunds, who are managed by the only Englishman coaching in European competition now. So we will obviously give full coverage of that and the rest of the Premier League fixtures, which are this week. Anything? What game are you going to tomorrow or Wednesday?
I'm going to West Ham Arsenal on Wednesday before our Christmas party.
So you're looking forward to Moyes shutting down Wenger's men. Jack, what for you on Wednesday?
Tottenham against Brighton.
Tottenham against Brighton, a stellar clash. And I don't think I'm going to one. So that is all we've got time for today.
Before anyone else tweets in, we do know that the Porto manager last season was Nuno Espirito Santo, now Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Oh, Nuno, is it? Nuno got sacked then by Porto.
Yeah, and then Marco Silva turned the job down.
Do you want to make your point about Mourinho's quote as well? Because it is funny.
Well, I was going to make a point comparing Mourinho to Donald Trump, but then Ed stole it from me.
No, I didn't. No, I set you up for it, and then you didn't take
the bait.
It's
not a setup when you. It's not a setup. You scored the goal yourself.
An absolute disgrace to accuse me of any. I'm just going to have this struck from the record. I set you up perfectly, and then you just left it there with the slam. The ball's up in the air. You're about to slam, and then you just let it bounce.
No, you didn't. You literally took the punchline.
That's literally what occurred.
Go on, though. Go on.
No, I mean, what I was going to say was that Mourinho comparing Mourinho's language, like two disgraceful goals, two very bad goals, incredibly lucky, was like reading a Donald Trump tweet.
Sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is like an Easter egg for anyone who actually gets through to the end of the podcast. Yeah. Not Miguel, because he recently told me he never listens to the podcast because he's a self-involved arsehole. But yeah, Easter egg for everyone involved. This has been the Indie Football Podcast. I've been Ed Malley, and this has been Miguel Delaney.
Yeah, thank you.
Jack Pitbrook.
I'm off to go and play Man's Not Hot to Ed, so you can get my cultural references
and
next time.
Thanks to producer Tom today, standing in for the traitorous producer Matt Murphy, and we will talk to you soon.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.